Hello, everyone, and welcome to another very special episode of Podcasting Them Softly. This is Nate, and this is my first podcast with Nick and Frank, so I'm super excited, and we're also very excited to be joined by actor Steve Railsback today, which is unreal. Steve is a guy with a super prolific career, an unmistakable presence, making vivid impressions in so many films over the years, including Richard Rush's The Stuntman, Rob Zombie's The Devil's Rejects, Intermedio, In the Line of Fire, Toby Hooper's Life Force, Barbed Wire, Disturbing Behavior, and just, like, so many more. I'm beyond stoked to be able to have him on the podcast and would love to just jump right into it. Steve, man, it's awesome to have you with us today. How's it going?
It's going fine. It's awesome to be here.
Awesome. Well, it's great to have you.
I mean, with you guys on the phone. Thank you. Thanks for the laugh.
Exactly. So I guess since I'm talking already, I might just pop into one of your movies here and ask you about it. You talked about Life Force before when we talked on the phone, and you were super stoked about it. A cult sci-fi thing, right?
Yeah, it's become like a cult classic. It did well in Europe. It was a very expensive movie.
Yeah.
It was like $35 million in 1984 and 85. I don't know what that would be today, but we had like four sound stages. But it was a great experience because Toby is a friend for a while. I knew him before I ever did the film, Toby Hooper. And we just had a great time. You know, it was 6 months in London. And, you know, the hard part was having that harness and being up way up high. We were on the Bond stage. We had four stages, but we were on the Bond stage. I'd go up real high and we'd be shooting blue screen, and I couldn't, you know, you had to hit a mark exactly or it'd show up double. But I had this harness on, and man, it started to hurt up there after a while. So I yelled out, "Get me down from here, Toby!" And I need a break. But anyway, I love Toby.
So that was in the big spaceship thing, eh? Near the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, that was the going through the space to find the pods. You know, going
the
through
vampire.
The other ship, floating in space. Yeah, and we might get one shot off a day. It's very difficult to shoot that. You know. But that's just for the space stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other, you know, we are great. I mean, look at John Dykstra, one of the greatest production designers, period. He won the Academy Award for Alien. He built the miniature of London. You know, back then they didn't have computers to do all of it. So, yeah, it was remarkable. Yeah, it was just a remarkable. It was a great time. Yeah, I just had a great time. I always try to have a great time. Some great actors, and you know. But what's happened now is it didn't do that well here in this country. I think it's ahead of its time. I do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the vampire thing. It was nitty. But anyway. Now it's become like, it always did great in Europe, but it's become, and Henry Mancini did the music, my God. It's become like this real cult film. People that didn't know it now, you know, and they did a Blu-ray of it a couple of years ago, and it's just incredible, you know. And it's fun. Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, to bounce to another one of your films, looking over your filmography, it's pretty amazing. You've been in so much great stuff, man.
Yeah.
You have such an eclectic filmography. And one of the standouts for me, and I'm very curious as to how you got hooked up with Todd Solondz for storytelling.
Oh, I just sat down with him and talked. He just wanted me to be a part of it, and I liked his work at the time, and I said okay. Basically, that was how that happened.
And he's such a unique cinematic voice. What was it like talking to him? Because he's kind of press shy and doesn't do a lot of interviews, and you don't really see him often.
He is kind of a shy person anyway, which is good. I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, you know. But he's very open with actors and open with his crew. He's not shy around that. You know, I like him. As a human being, I like him. And as a director. So.
Yeah, I find it, he tends to cast his films very eclectically. And I think a lot of his films have very tough subject matter that
a lot of
actors would probably shy away from when approached to be in one of his films.
Yeah, I can see that. Not as much this film, but he does hit on tough subjects, things that I might have turned down, but it doesn't mean that taking anything away from his creative, how creative he is.
Oh, no, not at all. I think he's brilliant. Yeah.
And, I enjoyed my time with him, you know, and it was great. I started in New York, you know. I flew to New York at 19 when I was to a small town in Texas. Study. Now there's a concept. I wonder. I care about this craft so much. A craft. And everybody did back then. And things just, you know, I just ate it, slept it. I mean, there wasn't a time I wasn't doing the work, you know, on the streets, whatever. I did a lot of plays. My first film, by the way, was my first film and Jimmy Woods' first film was the leads in Elia Kazan picture, who happens to be one of the greatest actors.
Well, was that like your first movie, and it's Elia Kazan directing?
Yeah, where do you go from there? No,
yeah, right?
I mean that seriously. he became like a father to me. He was always there for me. And, after we did the film, I'm talking about we did the film and we just, I just loved that man very much. He's a brilliant man. And, he was always there for me. Just, it was the time in my life when I went through a period. This is a couple of years after I did the film with him, but we were very close. Well, I went through a self-destructive kind of thing. And he wasn't going to allow it to happen. And he used a lot of tough love. And there were times he made me cry because he knew how I felt about it. But the point was, he was not going to let me self-destruct. He was there for me for a year. And about a month before I quit drinking, I was at his house having dinner. He had a 6-story brownstone. And I was sitting there, it's just him and I and his wife. And you had to go up one flight of stairs to go to the bathroom. And so I turned and started to go up the stairs, and he was coming down the stairs. And he threw me up against the staircase and started hitting me hard on the shoulder, saying, "Don't let him do it to you. Don't let him do it to you. You got it. You got it. Don't let him do it to you." And he turned around and he walked off. Now, I was in shock, but it hit me a little later what he was trying to tell me. He was trying to say, don't let a snide remark, don't let voices in your head, don't let anybody or anything take your talent away because it belongs to you. And that's what he was telling me. You've got it. You got it. Don't let them do it to you. You got it. You know, don't let them do it to you. Don't let them do it to you. You got it. You got it. Don't let them do it to you. And they turn around and walk away. And that's who he was talking about. the voices that we can get in our head, negativity or what. Thank you, Bill. And everything, he just saved my life. And he was always there for me. And I love that man so much, and I miss him. I was there when he passed away. But anyway, then after that, I went back to the stage, did a lot of stage, did a couple of movies, a couple of films. And then they called and asked me to come out to see about Helter Skelter. And I did, and they offered it to me. And just to show you how Kazan is always, you know, he was out here doing the film he did with De Niro. Mine just went blank.
Last Tycoon?
Yeah, he was out here casting Last Tycoon and was preparing. He was at Paramount. And I got this, I turned down Helter Skelter, just to show you how stupid I am, but I did. Because I didn't know why, but, you know, I just walked off a Broadway stage. And when you walk off a stage, your imagination is going. Your confidence is there. You can, you know, it's just a wonderful feeling. But that isn't why I turned it down. Anyway, I get this phone call from Mylene. That's his longtime secretary. And she says, Steve, I said, yeah. She said, well, Mr. Kazan's here. He wants to talk to you. I said, fine. Yeah, put him on. So he gets on the phone. And he says, hey, how you doing? I said, oh, I'm doing fine. He said, how'd the play go? I said, it went great. He said, good. So what are you up to? I said, well, they want me to do the play Charles Manson in this miniseries, CBS, you know, for me. He says, yeah. And I said, well, you know, I don't know I don't know. I said, no, maybe it's typecasting or whatever. And he said, oh, that's a Hollywood term. I don't know what that means. And then he says, who's directing it? And I said, a man named Tom Kreis. And he goes, Tom Kreis. He says, no, my God. And then he goes, oh, my God, Tom Grice. He says, Tommy Grice. He says, oh, you've got to do it. You've got to do it. He says, come up to my office. We'll go through the script page by page, but you've got to do it. No matter what, you've got to do it. And I said, my God, I'm doing it. You know, when he's just like that. And so I called up Tommy, and I said, I don't this. I'm doing it. So about 5 weeks later, I'm on the courtroom. The courtroom they built at Warner Brothers, and we were sitting there talking. We were sitting in director's chairs while we were talking. And Tommy says, did you get a Kazan, by the way? I said, yeah, I did. He says, you know, he's been a family for 25 years. I call him up and I said, well, you talk to his friend Kazan to do this. So the whole thing was, Kazan was trying to remember, he didn't know this guy, you know what I'm saying? But from his end of the conversation, anyway, Tommy had called him and said, would you talk this kid into doing this? And they had been friends for so long, he didn't call him. And you see, the thing about Helter Skelter that is impossible today, because there's 500 channels. Back then, there was just ABC, CBS, and NBC. And it was on CBS, and there were two independents, so that's five channels. So when Skelter played, about 104 million people watched it. Now, you can't get ratings like that anymore because it's 500 channels, and that's exposure. And anyway, I had a great time doing Helter Skelter. People say to me, did you end up in a psychiatry ward? I said, what? I had a ball. I'm dying over tables. You know, my God, I did. I had a ball. You know, I take a negative and make it a positive. So I'm coming from a whole other place. People see Manson because of my wig and my beard and all that, but they don't know what I'm thinking, you know? So I'm coming from a positive. I'm not so much playing Manson as I am, you know, you set up a true life. I mean, it's all real to me, but not that. But it doesn't matter. I'm just talking about acting now. Called Choices, Choices, Choices. And Tom Grice, he was so right about Tommy Grice, even though he was acting, to get me in, just to do this. Tom Grice had a greatest pair of eyes, and I loved that man so much, Tommy Grice. I remember, you know, when I did that speech, you know, that speech in Manson?
Yep, mm-hmm. I remember it.
Where, okay. Well, as I was walking up to go and do it, I said to Tommy, I said, watch me on this one, because I don't know what's going to happen. And I trusted his eyes, but the point was I didn't, because I know what my choices were, and I know what I was talking about. You know, people saw Manson. That's not what I was talking about. I was actually talking about, I don't care, our choices. I was actually talking about actors and how you can't. How could I take this? You can't try to take the tower away. You can't. You have no right to. The point is, my choices are positive. And I was talking to two people that had tried to take my conference away in New York. And the speech, and when I finished this, we did it in one take with three cameras. Now, that wouldn't happen. That wouldn't happen again, but it did that time. And when I stood up, is where the cut was, and I stood up, and it was like 1,000 pounds had been lifted off my shoulders. I let it all out. And everybody started applauding. Some were crying. There were people from other sets. Tommy had invited over, but it wasn't like I heard that. All I was is that Tommy came over. I just said, I got to talk to you. And we went in the back backstage. And I said, so tell me, he said, Steve, it was brilliant. Listen to those two balls. I said, no. I remember he had his arms on my shoulders. And he said, but I can't use a foot of it. And I said, why? He said, because Manson will get 100,000 more followers, which was a, you know, but to me, I said, I just relaxed. I just said, Tommy, I looked him in the eyes. And I said, I don't know how else to do it. And he took about a few beats, and then he said that it stays. I love that man, because I didn't know how else to do it. And when they, CBS, had to cut some time out, as you always do, to make room for commercials and to get to 4 hours, you know, they wanted to touch the speech, and Tommy wouldn't let them touch it. He told me, he said that in the, you know, once he said, I can't use a foot of it, then he said, you know, I mean, it's just something I'll always remember. And I said, I don't know how else to do it. He just said that it stays. I've been so fortunate in my life. I have turned down things that I never should have, made choices I never should have, but I've also been fortunate enough to make right choices. To work with Peter O'Toole, to work with Richard Rush, one of the most brilliant people I've ever been around. He wrote that screenplay, and he directed that screenplay.
Yeah, I actually wanted to I wanted to ask you about The Stuntman, because that's one of my it's in one of my personal favorite movies. I saw it when I was really young, and I didn't understand any of it. And throughout the years, I've come back to it repeatedly. And your performance is amazing in it. It's beyond multi-layered. And I just have to know, when you first read the script to The Stuntman, what was your first initial response?
Okay. This film is Richard Dresser's film. And Peter would say the same thing, and he did, on the Sinister Saga of the Making of. But... which is a double disc, but I read about the first, it was sent to me by my agent, and I read about 35 or 40 pages, and I knew it was, I had to call Richard Rush, I had to call him, and I called him, and what I said to him was, Richard, this is, I know this is special. I feel it in my gut, but I don't know what I'm reading. I mean, you got to understand it on paper. I didn't, you know, the layers. And he said, well, come on over. And this is another thing. I've had people ask me to turn things down and then never get the offer, but I went to his house, same house he has now, and I walked in, and we sat down, and we played with the script a little bit, and I read parts of camera, and then he did Nina, you know, Barbara's part. But after 10 minutes, he just looked at me, and he pointed his finger and said, you're Cameron. Now, this is a year and a half before we ever made it. This is his baby. He said, try to get made for 10 years. He said, you're Cameron. Now, during that year and a half, he also told Peter the same thing. Because Peter called him and said, if you don't give me this part, I'm going to kill you. he did. No. But the thing is that when he said that, anyway, a year and a half passed, and during that year and a half, he could have had the film made three different times. He could have had it made with Marty Sheen and George C. Scott. He could have had it made with me if they used Sean Connery, and he could have had it made with Peter if they used Jeff Bridges. And he wouldn't do it without Peter and I. Nobody's ever done that for me before or since. I mean, when he said, you're Cameron, and he's the most incredible human being, we couldn't wait to get to the set every day. Everybody. By the way, Peter's, what he wears, his costume, what he wears with the cigarette pouch, everything, that's Richard. He came over. Richard talking to somebody, dressed exactly like Richard. What you see on that screen is the way Richard Rush dressed all the way down to the cigarette pouch. And he said, Richard, he said, what do you think? And Richard talking to him, he turned around and looked. He said, oh, good. Yeah, about 5 seconds later, he turned back and said, oh, my God. You know, oh, my God. He said, he said, yeah. Yeah, it was a brilliant choice by Peter, but what a phenomenal human being and man Richard Rush is. What a great director, because he gives you a feeling, not verbally so much, as just you know it, you see it in his eyes, that he just wants everybody to fly, and he'll be there with a net to catch you. That's a wonderful feeling, and relaxed, and Peter, I had to bring my game way up. That man is brilliant.
So what was it like filming the big action sequence at the midpoint where you're on top of, like, the whatever you want to call it.
Running around?
Yeah.
The Coronado Hotel.
Yeah, exactly. What was that like, all of that with the planes and all of the extras and guys falling off the roofs and everything?
They would happen at separate times, some of them, you know, but you can't just shoot it all in one. Yeah, obviously. But I did a lot of the roof stuff, but I want to say this, and this is the fact. Those stunt guys are there protecting me. They're phenomenal people. I could do anything I wanted, and I knew they'd be there. They were there. You know what I'm saying? All that roof stuff, all that.
No, yeah. It's a crazy sequence. And then it goes inside the, you know, the hotel, and then you're
on the bed. Yeah, I go through the skylight, or my devil.
Yeah, family. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just a complete tour de force, the whole scene, and I can't believe the it's just everything about that movie, the way it ends, the final sequence, what it says about filmmaking, what it says about life in general, the random nature of everything. It's a movie that was so ahead of its time.
Oh yeah. And it is a classic, by the way. It's on everybody's top 100 of all time, and it's on some top 50s of all time. But that's all Richard. Nobody's going to take credit. We all point at Richard. He's an incredible. But working with Peter, he and I you know, once I passed the test or whatever, I'm kidding, but, you know, I wouldn't back down. But anyway, we would get off that pilot house that, you know, clear would come down, and we'd run off and we'd talk about choices. And he told me choices he had made in once in Arabia. And I'd tell him about choices I made. Those memories will be there for the rest of my life, talking about this work with Peter O'Toole. You know, that was the greatest 4.5 months I've ever had, to be honest with you.
He's one of the greatest acting talents of all time, and you had a chance to work with just the amazing and the lovely Barbara Hershey. I mean, what was that like working with her? Because I'm a big fan, and I've been going back and rewatching a lot of her, you know, earlier stuff, and she's just so great.
Oh yeah, no, she's wonderful. She's a pro. I everybody on that film, everybody, Barbara, Peter, myself. Alan Gore, everybody were there. You know, we just wanted to make Richard's vision come alive. I love Barbara. I really do. I'm just saying that that's how much everybody cared about Richard. The crew. I remember one time the AD came over and said, listen, we're going into real penalty. In other words, we got to stop rolling and we're going to real penalty. And the camera operator said, get away, we don't care. They wanted to finish his shot. You know, it's all about this man, Richard Rush. That crew would have killed for him. Every actor there would have killed for him. You know what I'm saying? It's a wonderful feeling. The respect that he has and deserves. You know, I talked to him yesterday. He's my son's godfather. And I talked to him yesterday about something that was going on in my life. On the phone, he said, I should come by. I didn't make it over, but Barbara's great. Everybody in the film. It was just a great 4.5 months. I mean, you know. And
could you have ever expected the film to have such a long life after sort of drifting into relative obscurity for a while and then being rescued by
I expect you to, but I want to tell you something. That film we will put into it'll show, you know, wherever, you know, we've been all over the world with that film. Audiences just go crazy. But about 3 years ago, we played at the Arclight. Now, I don't know if you know the Arclight, but it's a huge, huge theater. And it's in 70 millimeter. It did come out in 70 millimeter in some theaters. But it was packed. It was a single seat, and people were sitting in the aisle.
People I would have loved to have seen it there.
I mean, wherever we go, and then we get up and talk, Richard and I do. You know, they ask questions, this and that, and we actually do it a lot. Yeah, he calls it the Stephen Dick Show because we don't rehearse. But it's funny, but it is true. You know, we don't need rehearsal. And I'll even say that. You see, we shouldn't rehearse on this one? And he says, ah. It's just, we, you know, it's, the film is so multi-layered. You have to see it many times. And the more you see it, the more you'll see what you missed before. Because there's always something going on somewhere. When you're watching a scene, there's something else going on somewhere. I mean, just multi-layered. And he wrote it. That man put it on paper. And what a brilliant mind just to be able to do that. And he's just one of the greatest directors. And he gives you such a feeling. You just die. You just, you take chances, you take risks. What's the big deal? It's wonderful. But that's a relaxing thing. Because you know it's going to be there to catch it. Just go. And I'm so fortunate. Now, I'm not trying to be humble. I'm not. I am so fortunate to be involved in that film. I know how fortunate I am. My life, I've had the opportunity to live and still, you know, and be around to know the people that have. You know, there's a lot of scum in this business, but at the same time, there's some of the most incredible people that I wouldn't know. It probably me in this business. The scum may outnumber, but I'm going to tell you, that's a fact. The people that I've had the opportunity to work with, become friends with, whatever, if I wasn't in this business, I wouldn't know these incredible people. That's a wonderful thing. Ooh. Anyway, that's my bullshit.
No, you're good.
Steve, I just wanted to bring up one that I had to bring up, which is barbed wire.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know, it's kind of like, you know, this movie with Pam Anderson, and it kind of has this stigma to it, but it's actually a pretty awesome flick. Like, it's got its own kind of, like, post-apocalyptic sci-fi vibe, and then there's you as this like Nazi prick villain, and it's like it's super fun.
Yeah.
Like it's
with Xander, you see, Xander Berkeley's a very dear friend of mine.
Yeah, yeah. And then you have
I
that
love
epic
him so much. Oh, we had a ball, you know. Yeah, that actually it is a pretty damn good film. I mean, you know, anybody that wants to say it's not, it's just not watching. But it, you know, there were a lot of problems. You know.
Yeah.
Or during the shooting, But it's actually not a bad film. You know, you can't say it's a bad film.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you just said that, but it's true. it's got some pretty interesting stuff going on. You know, a lot of things. You know, that fight scene we have. You know, I really got to tell you, this is the truth. I really care about Pamela. I really do. It's her husband I can't stand. They're divorced, but he's a little, you know, I don't want to get into it. But she is a good lady that fell into a trap by this man named Tommy Lee, a real punk.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm not going to go any farther. I've already gone too far.
All good, man. All good.
All good. I wanted to ask you about, I'm a huge fan of The X-Files.
And, oh, yeah.
And your two-episode arc as Dwayne Barry still remains one of the absolute best parts of that show, and your character in particular. And I was curious as to how you got involved with that show.
Actually, I just directed a film, Flight of the Dove, Spy with Dan, and I was in the editing room, and I got these two. I hadn't seen the X-Files at the time. Is that okay? This is another time somebody did. It's so rare, but I looked at these things. I said, "This is great. They should put it together, make a movie out of it." See, I'd never seen X-Files, so I turned it down because I was in the middle of editing. And I got a phone call in the editing room. And I got a phone, and Chris Carter introduced himself to it. It was Chris Carter who did them and directed Dwayne Barry.
Mm-hmm.
His first directing job. I still have the sweatshirt that has Virgin on the back since it was his first director. Yeah. And he said, he was so kind. I said, you know, this is what I read is incredible. And he asked me if I was aware of X-Files. I said, no, but no, that came up after. Cause he said to me, this is only, I said, Richard said, you're Cameron. This is another time in my life. He said to me, he said, Steve, if you don't do it, I don't know what to do. He said, because I wrote it for you. Nobody has ever written anything for me. And I was so flattered and so taken aback. I said, then I'll be there. If somebody's going to write something for me, and he calls me to tell me he doesn't know what to do if I don't do it because he wrote it for me, you bet I'm going to be there. And I had a ball. Huh?
I was going to say that's so perfect because I mean, I can't imagine anybody else playing that part. It's so perfectly you, and that makes so much sense with you saying that.
Well, that's Chris. But he wrote it for me. And it was perfect for me. And, you know, I had the greatest time. I love David Duchovny. He's a friend. You know, I love Chris Carter. He's still a friend. But, you know, when he said that, I said, I'm there. I mean, what else are you going to say? I mean, I closed up the editing room, and I was gone for 3 weeks to shoot those two episodes. And it was so great. You know, working with David, who's a wonderful actor, because he's so confined, I love Dwayne Barry. I do. I respected Dwayne Barry. I respect anybody I play because I'm going to find something. But he was telling the truth all I always tell the truth. But Tony was telling the truth. You know, it even shows up in the show. When they find something inside of him, and they go to the cash register, and it makes his mouth soft. But the thing was, is that the way he had it up to here with people telling him he was crazy and putting him in an institution, he couldn't stand it anymore. He wasn't an evil man. He was somebody who just nobody would listen to him. You know what I'm saying?
And wow, then, that's very cool.
That really came through in your performance, too. Hearing that now, that was really something that rang true.
It's the truth. That man, I respected Dwayne Berry because he just wasn't going to take it anymore. You know, and there's some very quiet, wonderful moments in that where we're just talking, David, now, about his sister. About, oh, yeah. You know, all these. It's so well written. Chris Carter is a brilliant fucking writer. And when you have those words, you just make, you know your choice, you made your choice, and the point is, words, it's not about words, it's about where they come from. And then his words are 50% because they're so easy, they just come right out. And through the choice, you know, which the choice is obvious, but his words are so to say them. He's a wonderful writer, is what I'm trying to say. He's just a phenomenal writer, and I thank God he called me, and I closed the bedroom. What a great time.
That's awesome to hear, man. So, how about the Devil's Reject? You want to talk about that at all?
Oh, I did that. The producers are very close friend of mine, and Bill Forsyth is a very close friend of mine. And they, Mike Elliott, the producer, called me and said, would I come in and just do the same with
Forsyth? With Bill Forsyth.
he's and I said, sure. And that's how that happened. And Rob Zombie's a class act, too, by the way. I didn't know his music. I didn't know him. I wanted him to call me.
I absolutely love that film for a variety of reasons. I'm not the biggest horror guy, but I think Devil's Rejects is a phenomenal film. And I always enjoyed your cameo because you bring an excellent novelty to the film. It's so cool to see you pop up and share the scene with William Forsythe and your character is the hardened ranger that doesn't speak Spanish. It's just the greatest thing ever. I don't know what the fuck you're saying. I don't speak Spanish.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
And describe when William Forsythe tells you he doesn't want to hear the details of your deputy's asshole. That part always cracks me up.
Listen, we cracked up a lot. I mean, Bill has been a friend of mine for years. You know, and he's a wonderful actor, too.
Oh, he's amazing.
And, I love him. I really do. He's a friend. He's just. And other films, you know, I'm very proud of Ed Gein.
Yeah.
What a huge one, yeah.
It was a character study. It wasn't a bloodthirsty movie. It wasn't about blood. It was a character study. They brought it to me as a slasher film. I said, no. I said, but if you want to do a character study, I'm interested. So we stopped the nice draft. I just carried this study, all factual, about a man who, most of the film takes place in his mind. You know, his mother, with Terry, when she appears, she's dead. But he sees her, I just want to show all the colors that make up the schizophrenia, that make up a human being. I wasn't, what he did was awful, but that's not what I was playing, because this kid, you know, she would tell him what to do. He couldn't do anything without asking his mom, mama. I'm talking as an actor, I feel it's one of the best performances I've ever given. I really do. Yeah, I do. So we need to go there. I mean, it's just, I stepped out there. And I leaped. And anyway, I'm very proud of it. And I executive produced it, but just, I'm proud of it because of what I did. I really am. And if people don't see what it is, and they still see blood and shit, there's none. Very little. It's a character study. God almighty, get real here.
Mm-hmm.
Most people know that, by the way. People cross me all the time talking about it.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that film was the first film that spawned that whole subgenre of serial killer biopics. Because if I'm remembering correctly, that was the first one that came out, and then Dahmer came out, and then Gacy came out.
The same producers.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
William Forsythe played Gacy in one of them, and then it just kept snowballing, you know.
Yeah, no, I don't. I talk to Bill all the time. We're always texting each other. He's calling me, and I'm calling him.
That's awesome.
He's in Florida right now. No, he's like my brother.
It's funny because one of my favorite actors, Michael Wincott, also played Ed Gein in a movie back in 2012. And as good as he was, he still didn't nail it as well as you did in
well,
Ed Gein.
That was a slasher film.
Which one? It was about Hitchcock, and it was with Anthony Hopkins, where
that was about Hitchcock, yeah.
Yeah, but Michael, he had a small bit as Ed Gein in that, yeah.
Yeah, no, that was fine. That was good. They didn't over, you know, whatever. Actually,
But you're talking about there's one with Kane Hodder, and that's an
actor,
like a slasher.
That was a slasher film.
Yeah.
And, you know... But that's the last thing I wanted to do in this film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, all I wanted to do was create something. I love the challenge of doing characters, doing a character study, and trying to show all the colors that make up that man. All of us. I mean, we all have, you know.
I know I spoke to you briefly about this before, but one of my favorite performances of yours is in The Line of Fire, where you play the CIA agent David Coppinger.
So cool.
In an uncredited role, by the way, and you're the one that gives the big reveal of John Malkovich's character.
I know, and I did take an uncredited. I asked people, I said, you don't need to credit. Yeah. That was great. He's somebody I've known since like 77. He wanted me to do a film called The Gauntlet. He was directing it, but I couldn't do it. I was doing something else. But I went to his office. He asked me to come in anyway, and we talked. So he's been like an acquaintance over the years. And he just asked me if I would do this. And I said, of course. And it is the big deal.
Yeah.
The character does.
Leary's what we call a wet boy. I love that line.
Yeah. More like a predator.
Right.
Like a predator, yes.
Oh, you know, that's so cool.
Badass line delivery.
It is, man. It is. It's so cool.
It's so memorable.
I had a good time. I really did. Eastwood, he also produced a film that my brother wrote, Philip. He was a great writer, passed away. A film with a son, Bobby Duvall, who I've known for so many years. And I associated produced it, and Eastwood produced it. And it's a great cast. My best friend at the time, he directed it, who I asked Eastwood, you know. Eastwood, I would never say anything bad about Eastwood. I really wouldn't. He's a great businessman. And he's a terrific actor. And he's a wonderful, you know, loyal, whatever. But he can be an 800-pound gorilla at times. I don't mean that in talking. Don't get me wrong. Do not take that. Don't even put it in if you get that wrong.
Oh, no.
Because, you know, he wouldn't be where he is if he wasn't. You know. He's got more lip marks on his ass than anybody I've ever known. Oh, God. We were in his office. We were in his office. Myself, my wife, and Jimmy. Jimmy Keats, who directed it. And we went, he called me and said, come to my office. And he could recite words that he would say lines and stuff. I mean, he just loved it. And there was a producer, a director, something at Waters, and he would tell these jokes, and he'd look at us for his talent, and it was so bad, not my jokes, but this guy falls off his chair laughing, and I'm sorry, you got to get a visual. Flash of Genius, that Spyglass and Universal made, it came out right after he died. It's a great film. You should see it.
With Greg Kinnear, right?
Huh? Yeah.
Greg Kinnear's in that? Yeah, yeah.
My brother wrote
that. Alan Alda?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
No, he's a great writer. And he passed away. He had a stroke. But he wrote some incredible, phenomenal screenplays. You know. I mean, if you saw that film, Kinnear, you'll see what a great, you know what a great writer he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen it. It's very good.
Yeah. That's just, you know. And stars Stellan Henrietta is the one that Eastwood produced, my associate. And he was just a wonderful man, wonderful writer, and wonderful brother. So, anyway. I don't know what else to talk about. That's weird. I can ramble. My kids hide away from me.
Well, I got one for you. And this is something I've always been curious about. There's a movie called Once Fallen that says that you're in it, but I watched it like twice and I can't find you anywhere in it. Are you anywhere in it?
Just one little tiny thing. But I don't think it's there anymore. I did it as a friendship thing.
Okay, yeah. The one with, you know, Ed Harris, Peter Weller, and yeah.
Yeah, no, I know.
Yeah, I was stoked for that to come out, and I was like, oh, yeah, Peter Green and Steve Rail's back. And then I watched it, and I was like, where's Steve?
Where's Steve?
Where's Steve?
Yeah. That's okay.
Oh, no worries.
I didn't get along with the director. I don't know. You know, hey, fly. I got no problem. Got no problems.
Yeah.
I count my blessings. Yeah.
What can you tell us about Blue Monkey?
What? What do you want me to tell you?
I'm gonna have to revisit it, investigate it. I have this vague memory of seeing that movie a long time ago.
I can understand it's a vague memory. Yeah. Yeah. It was fun. The guy who directed it was really terrific. I don't know. It's one of those films I did for whatever reason. I saw something, and that something wasn't what I saw. But I was there. You know, it happened. It was a bad choice, it's called. But hey.
I remember it being, I remember it being a really fun, like.
No, it probably is. You know, I've never seen it.
I can't believe you've seen that and I haven't, Nick. Christ.
I'm almost positive I've seen it. I'm like 98% sure I've seen it.
You should research that. Write a paper on it. No, I'm kidding.
This is the movie where there really is no blue monkey per se. Like you don't actually see blue monkey. Yeah. Okay.
I can't remember. Yeah. They put that in after.
Yeah.
What about Armed and Dangerous, Steve?
I was just going to ask that.
That's not a role you forget.
No, I tell you something. John Candy, I love. That man was so generous. I knew him before, but we had so much fun. They'd have to stop him. They were pulling us off. Anyway, but, you know, because we just burst out laughing. He made me laugh. I'm like, you know, whatever. It didn't matter. We had so much fun. What a wonderful human being we lost. What a wonderful actor. What a wonderful comic. What a wonderful human being that we lost. And, yep, John Candy was a special man. And very, you look at Trains, Planes, and Automobiles and look at his performance, how he can change getting home for Thanksgiving. You understand what I'm talking about? Did you ever see that?
Oh, yeah.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you look at Candy's performance. It's brilliant. All the different emotional levels he has. That's an incredible performance.
Yeah, I was always very fond of his performance in JFK, and I had wished that he did a little bit more of dramatic performances, but he was cut short.
He could have done anything.
Yeah. He was phenomenal in that. And Trains, Planes, and Automobiles. And Armed and Dangerous. I'm glad Nate brought that up because I was going to ask you about that. I love that film.
Okay. I do too. I really do.
It's so funny.
And so much fun.
I'm trying to look over your filmography and see if there's anything else I want to ask you about. And I'm just realizing there's a bunch of stuff I haven't seen, man. I'm like, I should have done my research. Well, there's a bunch of stuff that's hard to find, right? Like, you've done some stuff that's pretty tough to track down. So, there's some homework.
The Assassin's a good film. You should see that.
Which one?
The Assassin.
The Assassin. Hold on, I gotta find
it. The Assassin.
Yeah, I just looked at it. I don't think it's available on Amazon or anything.
You should find it, because it is a terrific film.
Okay.
It just didn't talk. But boy, it's a good film.
Another one with Xander Berkeley.
Sure. That was Andrew Nagel. He's a great guy. He told me about 3 weeks ago about something. And I said, you know, every time I turn on the fucking TV, that thing he did with Harrison Ford, you know, with Harrison Ford's the president.
Air Force One.
I said, every time I turn on a fucking TV, Air Force One is on. I can't believe it. How many times they play that? But that's what I said to Xander, you know.
Yeah.
He's funny.
So you're doing a Western with, like, you're doing a Western with Lance Henriksen right now, are you? What a great cast with Tom Berenger.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I got to keep an eye out for that. And Danny Trejo, too? Wow.
Yeah. No, it's a great cast. And I had a great time.
Mm-hmm.
Great time.
I got to keep an eye out for that.
Yeah.
Well, it's been awesome talking to you, Steve. I mean, Nick and Frank, is there anything else we want to bring up or shoot the shit about?
I mean, I think we're good.
I think we're good.
Thank you very much for your time, man.
And thank you for sticking with me.
Of course, dude.
Let me. Yeah. You guys are great.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking the time to speak with us. This has been an absolute treat.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Very much. Very cool.
Okay. Thank you guys so much.